The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're gonna get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
We're past the Chicago game, and obviously it wasn't the performance we wanted to have, but you know, we're moving on. We still have 12 games to play, and we feel really good about our chances moving forward. And in this building, we know what we're capable of as a team, and what's behind us is behind us. And we're looking straight ahead, and we're looking forward to this game Sunday against Atlanta, against a good opponent, a really good defense. So we got to have a good week of preparation, and we're excited.
The quarterback, Sam Howell, earlier today, on the day that quarterbacks speak in a normal Sunday game work week, saying they've put Chicago behind them. They are now focused on Sunday's game with the Atlanta Falcons. Wednesday's also the first day of serious practice in preparation for that game, a game in which Atlanta is favored by 2.5 points at MyBookie. Go to mybookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC to take advantage of an unheard-of offer in the sportsbook world. MyBookie is offering my listeners only, you've got to use promo code KevinDC, a 110% cash bonus on your initial deposit. $50 minimum, $1,000 max. They're going to more than double your money in your account after your first deposit. You put in $100, you'll have $210 when you use my promo code KevinDC. You put in $1,000, you'll have $2,100 before you've made your first wager at MyBookie. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. For this offer, which they've been nice enough and generous enough to offer for a couple of weeks running, but I think this is going to be the last week it's available. Even if you have a place where you're betting, take the free money. MyBookie is one of these fair places. You're not going to get ripped off on pricing. You're not going to get bad lines. You're going to get fair point spreads, totals, money lines. They've got everything you'd want from a prop bet perspective, and you're going to get free money. 110% cash bonus on your initial deposit. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. Atlanta, by the way, has won 3 games at home to start this season. They've only played 1 road game in their first 5 because one of their 5 games was in London against Jacksonville, a game they lost 23-7. They're 3-0 at home. They beat the Panthers in the season opener 24-10. They beat the Packers on a late field goal 25-24 in week 2. And then last week, they came from behind on the final drive of the game to beat Houston on a walk-off field goal 21-19. That was the best game for Desmond Ridder, their second-year quarterback of his career. He threw for over 300 yards and led them on that last-minute drive for a game-winning field goal. They're 3-2 in a division that, let's face it, has been surprising so far. The NFC South was thought to be the worst division top to bottom. Tampa Bay's 3-1. Atlanta's 3-2. New Orleans is 3-2. Carolina's 0-5. Some people liked Carolina before the season started. I actually thought they had a chance to be better than people thought. But they're 0-5, and you know, Bryce Young has had a rough start to his rookie season, including some injury involved there. The show today will include Steve Zabin. He'll be on in the next segment and the final segment. We'll get his thoughts on the quarterback, Sam Howell, and on Washington so far through five games, and I'm sure a lot more as well. I want to get to Sam Howell here at the beginning of the show. You'll hear what he said about Taylor Heinicke coming up here in a moment. But I saw two numbers out there today that I wanted to share with you. One was put out by Nick Akridge. Nick is the Pro Football Focus data analyst who is a big Washington fan. We have Nick on the show. I had Nick on the radio show last week. Nick's great. He's been on the podcast several times. And he tweeted out the following earlier today. Sam Howell has dropped back to pass 236 times, the most in the NFL. And he has the sixth highest adjusted completion percentage at 79.8%. It's not a surprise that he leads the league in dropbacks. We've watched all five games, and we know that they have, you know, called pass plays a lot more than run plays in the first five games. The sixth highest adjusted completion percentage at 79.8% is excellent. And by the way, that adjusted completion percentage is something that factors in things like, you know, clocking the ball, spiking the ball to stop the clock, drop passes, and a few other things to give you a more accurate completion percentage based on, you know, just the quarterback's involvement in the play. There's another part to Nick's tweet about that, you know, about those two numbers. And it, I'm reading it to you because it's exactly what I thought for the most part when I read the first part. Nick tweeted, EB, Eric Bieniemy, has thrown him directly in the deep end to start the season, and I love it. The best way for him to learn is to not baby him and see what he can do. I pretty much agree with that wholeheartedly. And it's something that we kind of picked up on, right, in week two. You know, even after the first week, we were like, man, that was a lot of dropbacks. That was a lot of called pass plays. That was a heavy pass-to-run ratio in the first half, and it got him in trouble. You know, it put him in a hole against Arizona. And then we saw the same thing in Denver. And I said, I think, after the Denver game, look, something is becoming kind of clear through 2 weeks. Eric Bieniemy is focused on instilling his philosophy, his offensive philosophy, right from the jump. And at the same time, he wants to find out whether or not Sam Howell is the quarterback to execute that philosophy. The philosophy being, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to throw the football a lot more than we're going to run it, because that's how you win in the NFL today. And I'm not going to baby Sam Howell. I'm going to throw him to the wolves a little bit here early. We're going to see if we've got the right guy. And, you know, it kind of became that balance of, you know, long game, you know, instilling philosophy, you know, giving the quarterback even more than you would typically give a first-time quarterback, an inexperienced quarterback that had only started one game and not even a real legitimate game at the end of last year. And, you know, I questioned not the philosophy, and I didn't question the long-game approach. In fact, I said there's something to be said for that. I mean, they're not going to the Super Bowl this year. But the Buffalo game, it became clear that the kind of drop back, the kind of pass play call had to change a little bit, because the pure drop back was just not something that was working very well, in part because of the offensive line and in part because of Sam Howell. And so, you know, we saw much more against Philadelphia, and even against Chicago when they were down, we saw a much more quick game. We still saw a lot of pass and heavy pass to run, even though in the Philadelphia game, the pass to run ratio was the tightest that we've seen in any of the games. But, or certainly, you know, in a game that was competitive. And the Chicago game got sideways pretty quickly. But I think I don't mind Eric Bieniemy thinking long-term, and I love that Eric Bieniemy has adjusted not moving away from his philosophy, not moving away from not babying Sam Howell, but allowing him to thrive with the forward pass in a way in which they can play football and be competitive and they can really evaluate. Because the Buffalo game was not an evaluation game. You can't do that over and over again. And like I said, that after that game, based on what Ron said, Ron definitely stepped in and said, "We got it. I don't have a problem with being a pass first team. I want you to have the autonomy to instill your philosophy. We're both all in on learning what we got with Sam Howell, but drop back right now, pure five step and more drop back is not sustainable." And plus we're going to get him killed. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Not that it was a surprise on the drop back. The sixth highest adjusted completion percentage is excellent. So I wanted to also mention something else that's out there today. It's not as flattering of Sam. In fact, it's unflattering of Sam's work through five games. But I wanted to share it with you anyway, because many of you sent this to me. Full disclosure, I'm not familiar with the gentleman who put this out there. I'm not familiar with his work. His name is Travis May. He's more of a college football guy, it would appear, based on his Twitter handle. He was with Fantasy Pros, which is a pretty big outfit and a legitimate sort of football analytical site. But anyway, this is what he did. And the reason I'm going to read it to you is because the results, the output, seems intuitive to me. It seems like it's probably right. What he did was, in layman's terms, is he ranked the quarterbacks in the NFL based on their sacks taken and those that took those sacks based on something that was more attributable to what they did versus, the offensive line or coverage, et cetera, having, culpability for the sack. And the quarterback with, and it was a probability over expected model that this guy put together. I'm not going to get it into the weeds on that because a lot of you, I think it's easier just to say, this is a ranking of the quarterbacks where you see the quarterback that is the best in the league at avoiding sacks, or when he takes a sack, it's not his fault, it's the offensive line's fault, or it's, great coverage or whatever. That, by the way, was Patrick Mahomes by a mile. And then the quarterback that was last or was the most likely to take a sack based on something attributable to him, Sam Howell, by a lot, by a big disparity over Daniel Jones. So the reason I put that out there is because, first of all, I think we've all seen that, right? We know that a lot of these sacks that he's taken are based on him processing speed, trying to make a play, holding on to it too long, etc. All of it leads to holding on to it too long, and he's taken, a record-breaking, stretch of sacks. I mean, he's on a pace to shatter the NFL record. And so the reason I put it out there is I do think, and I don't want to be hyperbolic here, this is a fatal flaw. If it doesn't get better, he's not the guy. You can't play a quarterback that takes sacks at the rate that he's taking them at, with the majority of them, we believe, his fault. The most likely to take a sack based on something that he's doing or not doing. It's too much lost yardage. It's too many punts. It's too many turnovers to be consistent enough offensively to overcome it. With that said, my belief is that a lot of his ranking is based on the Arizona game and Buffalo games, and he was much better in the Philadelphia game and Chicago game. I think Eric Bieniemy gets a lot of credit for that because I think their pass offense was more in line with trying to avoid what we saw in the Buffalo game and in the Arizona game. But I just wanted to put it out there because this is something that we are going to, take real pleasure in: a guy that can really throw it, a guy that can really create off schedule, a guy that's really tough and gritty, et cetera, et cetera. But this is one of those, you know, numbers that is borderline fatal, hard to overcome. It's got to be something that improves. And again, maybe the last two games were much more improved. I would say that they probably were. And maybe he keeps getting better. We've heard that he's a fast learner, that he auto-corrects himself. And if he's coached well and he's coached out of this stuff, then the other stuff becomes, hey, you got something. You really do. But he can't lead the league in sacks attributed to him, especially given how many he's taking. That is not sustainable. This is what he said, by the way, earlier today about playing last year with Taylor Heinicke.
Taylor's the best. Just being here with Taylor and just getting to learn from him. Obviously, kind of last year was crazy with how everything kind of went down. But yeah, just seeing how he is as a person on a daily basis, and he's such a good teammate, such a good guy, and everybody loves him. And just seeing how he goes about his life and how he goes about his job and playing the position, definitely learned so much from him. And he was just always someone that was so willing to help me learn. And so it was definitely a fun time, and he's a great dude. We still talk every now and then, so it'll be fun to see him before the game.
Two-thirds of a quarterback room last year that was high quality in terms of the individuals. That's for sure. We won't see Taylor Heinicke on Sunday unless Desmond Ridder gets hurt, I would imagine. That would be the only way we would see Taylor Heinicke, especially after Desmond Ridder played so well last week. One more thing before I get to Zabe. The Orioles getting swept. This is meaningful to a lot of you. I know a lot of listeners to this podcast are Orioles fans. I knew a lot of people that went to the games at Camden Yards over the weekend. Man, does it happen quickly in October. It's over quickly in October. 101 wins for Baltimore this year, a division title, 6 months of joy, 6 months of this long ride of, good God, they are really good. They've got a chance to win the World Series. They've got a chance to play a lot of games in October. And in 4 days, it's over. 3 losses in 4 days, it is over. It's just such a cruel postseason sport. I'm not saying that, you know, endings in other sports aren't cruel as well. But the other sports, it doesn't happen as quickly. Look, one-and-done sports, it does, okay? But we understand the nature of one-and-done. Those regular seasons are shorter. You know, the NFL season is, you know, 17 games, not 162. It's not 6 months. You're not sitting there anticipating the playoffs for 6 months and then it's over in 4 days. But, you know, when a number one seed goes down in the NFL playoffs, it's shocking. It's brutal. It's painful. The Packers and the Titans 2 years ago as one seeds went down in their first game. The Packers to the 49ers, remember, in that 13-10 game, didn't they have a block punt for a touchdown? I mean, it's the suddenness of it. You know, NCAA tournament one and done is the most sudden, I think, because, you know, when you're a two seed or a three seed and you lose to a 15 or a 14, or in Virginia's case, lose to a 16, after 30 games and 28 wins and a conference championship, it is so, so brutal to have it end in 2 hours. You know, the one and dones are kind of a different deal. Baseball in the series sports is the most abrupt, because in basketball, you know, first of all, their regular seasons are longer, but their postseasons, they're all best of sevens. And then, you know, you don't play back-to-back games. You know, you play game one on a Sunday, and then game two is Wednesday night, and then game three is Saturday. Like, if you go down in four straight in the best of seven, it's a week and a half. It's at least a week in baseball. 4 days, 3 losses, done. I mean, after just anticipating for 6 months this possibility. And by the way, with the Orioles, it was even worse because the last two games weren't even competitive. They were down 9-2 in the third inning of game two on Sunday, and last night down 6-0 after two innings. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that they had a great regular season, but man, the payoff in October for what you invested during the course of the season, it just doesn't seem fair. I've said this, I said it to Tommy yesterday, and I know I've said it a couple of times previously. I think this round, regardless of what, how, you know, if it pushes the World Series back 2 or 3 days, this round should be best of seven. I mean, if you're going to play 162 and you're going to be the one seed, you know, don't give them a short series. The short series favors the underdog. It favors the lesser team. And at least allow for the team and its fans to have more than 4 days. Best of seven, sweeps don't happen that much. You're going to get probably a week at least of playoff baseball before it's over. Tonight, by the way, it could be, you know, a quick exit for the Dodgers, who won 100 games, and they're playing Arizona, a team that won 84 and barely qualified for the last wild card spot. I feel badly for Orioles fans. I know how, you know, how much so many of you were anticipating, you know, the playoffs this year and them being a big part of it for a while, and it ended quickly. Don't forget to rate us and review us if you have a chance on Apple and Spotify in particular. A quick two-sentence review on Apple with a 5-star rating is much appreciated. Also, our podcast is presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com for the deal of the year. More on that deal coming up when we talk to Steve Zabin. Next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Zabe coming up here in just a minute after I tell you about Window Nation. If windows are something that you've been thinking about, just give Window Nation a shot. That's all I'm asking. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. If you've got older windows, 10 years of age or older, if you want your home to look better, if you want to save on your energy bills, they will help you out. They've been helping everybody out for a long time. I've sent so many people over the years to Window Nation, and it always works out. They're going to take good care of you. You mention my name, you'll get a free estimate. And right now, their fall deal is as good a deal as you'll get all year long. Buy two, get two free with no limit, with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 full years. So you'll have these windows in your home, brand new, making your home look better, decreasing your energy bills, your air conditioning and your heating bills, and you're not going to pay for them until the year 2025. And when you start paying for them, you're going to pay half price. Buy two, get two free, no limit. No money down, no payments, no interest until the year 2025. Window Nation is the best. They're top 5 window retailer in America, but they make all of their windows locally. They measure each window 3 times to ensure proper fit. It works for everybody that's used them. Try them out. Give them a shot. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. All right, jumping on with us right now is Steve Zabin. We are trying to figure out where we are in our home and home series. We'll figure that out. I'm going to do Zabe's podcast next, I'm sure, if we remember that we both did this one today. Yeah. On my podcast.
I cannot remember. I literally, this is like the standoff between Maryland and Georgetown, or I guess more specifically, it was Gary and John Jr., right?
Well, it was Lefty and John first, and then it became Gary and John, yes.
And Gary, being the fiery type that he is, was not going to let bygones be bygones. He inherited that thing, and he's like, no, till they come out to play us, we ain't playing them. What a waste.
Well, you know, Coach and I would have it out occasionally in the bullpen about this. You know, the one thing that I loved.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The thing that I loved about Coach so much is that.
Coach being Coach Thompson, not Gary.
Yeah, Coach
Gary
Thompson.
Gary has been in our studios as well.
He has, but every single day, Coach was in our studios because he did the show right after mine for many years. And I loved Coach, and I miss him dearly. But, you know, he would do that thing in the bullpen where he'd go, why, motherfucker, would we want to play you? You know, and I would say, well, you know, MF-er, we played you for all those years when you weren't anything, you know, and it would just go back and forth. And, you know, his whole thing was always that, and he didn't, you know, this was, we knew one thing about Coach. He would tell you exactly the way he felt. And he said, you know, from the jump, I was not building a local program. I was building a national program. And he did. He built an iconic pop culture phenomena college basketball program for many years. And because of that, and because of the formation of the Big East and the way he liked to schedule in the non-conference, hello St. Leo or Hawaii Hilo, he didn't want to have anything to do with Maryland for a long period of time. And that was a shame because the area missed out on what should be, even today, an annual, you know, top five sporting event on the local calendar.
When a small Catholic school from D.C. is having rappers in L.A. wear starter jackets that say Hoyas on it,
yeah,
that's when you know there is a major cultural phenomenon going on right now. The 30 for 30 on the Hoyas was amazing.
Yeah, well, it was.
But then again, you and I lived it. You and I lived it growing up here. So
yeah, we did. We did. So anyway, I think the last time you and I did something, it was on your podcast. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But we'll just.
We'll treat it as such, and you owe me a return date. Return date in the near future. We don't know when. TBA.
Order filled. So speaking of order filled, Zabe said, give me 5 minutes. I'm powering down some Chipotle right now. I had a conversation 2 days ago with my producer Denton on the air, and I don't know how Chipotle came up. I can't even remember what the context was. I'm off Chipotle. Used to be one of my favorites. I'm now off of it. It's been 6 months. I don't know. I don't know why. I think the last time I went... Well, I think it wasn't
is it
that...
a combination of things?
It wasn't a terrible experience.
Escalating prices?
No. It would never, for me, in terms of a product that I like in sort of the fast, casual format, which is what Chipotle is, it wouldn't be about price. I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, a couple of bucks here or there. It's product quality.
well... Listen to Mr. One Percenter there.
No.
I mean, my lunch was just $19.
Have you seen the latest of those Geico commercials, you know, where, you know, you don't become your, you know, your parents and, you know, I forget what the older gentleman's name is who ends up being on all of these, but he's taking this group of parents young, you know, through,
Professor Rick.
He's taking him through like a Sweet Green or a Chopped, you know, one of these salad places.
Yeah.
You know, they say, well, what kind of rice would you like? And they're just completely stumped, you know, brown. But the best is when the guy gets the cash register, sir, that'll be $19.95. And he pulls out this wallet with shit falling out of the wallet. And he says, oh, no, I'm just paying for mine. That's good.
Yeah, well, okay, so you tell me. Bowl of chicken with white rice, no cilantro. I make the poor line server go to the back, get out of the heating cabinet, the rice that is yet to be soiled by the vile grass clippings that is cilantro.
Oh, you don't like cilantro.
And they get a scoop of that out of the unsoiled, you know, white rice, blows everything up. People behind me are staring daggers in my back of my head, but I don't care. They should have a separate bin. They should have a separate bin right there. Cilantro rice, plain white rice. Stop it already. Anyway, so I get plain white rice, chicken and cheese. That's it. And I got a small queso and a small bag of chips and a small soda. Ding, 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 $19.
Yeah.
I mean, that's steep. That's steep. That hurts right there. That's $12 retail in a just world.
Look, everything is ridiculous now. I mean, I go in.
I know, but why?
I mean, coffee, like a coffee is $8. It's supply chain. It's, I don't know what it is. Honestly, at this point, I mean, do we really want to go down the path of talking about our fiscal policies in this country right now?
Well,
let's not.
No. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I know that inflation is real. I know that it's caused by printing too much money, and we've done that. That said, I believe there's got to be some opportunism from establishments, restaurants, companies, stores to say we'd be crazy not to raise our prices. Everyone else is.
Right.
We are still getting our widgets, our cilantro, our whatever at the same price. But why are we not taking advantage of this? I wouldn't say it's gouging, but it's opportunistic. There's got to be some of that going on.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. But let me just get back to your one percenter comment, because I remember it. I remember it clearly.
I'm a one percenter too.
The whole, to me, fast casual, fast food, I'm never thinking about price. Now, when you go to a good restaurant for dinner, that's when I start, you know, doing the value equation. Was it worth it or wasn't it worth it? I mean, whether it's $19 or $16, that isn't a big deal to me. It's the product quality. So I always liked Chipotle, and I was very much more of a burrito bowl, and I loaded up my burrito bowl much more than you did. By the way,
think I get a discount? You'd think I would get a discount for being such a picky Pete plain eater. Look at all the stuff I could have had them add, and they didn't. Do I get a break? No.
So now I'm kind of remembering how this conversation came up. It came up with something having to do with them going to robot, basically
McDonald's.
Robots handling the Chipotle lines and fast food lines. And I said, well, I wonder whether or not at Chipotle, when you ask the robot to mix up the bowl before they put the top on it, or mix up the burrito, because that's actually a good move. I see people do that all the time. You know, especially with a burrito, you know, can you mix it up for me?
Right.
But what I do with the burrito bowl is I just shake it before I open it.
That works as well. Well, look, all these fast food places are going to automate as much as possible because the minimum wage has gone up so much.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a fact of life.
What's your position been on, as we switch subjects abruptly? What's your position been on the brotherly shove, the tush push?
Well, it's a brilliant play according to the rules as they exist now by the Eagles. They do it better than anyone else. I do not believe in the thought of, well, you know, Jalen Hurts never misses leg day. He squats this many pounds. That's why he's good at it. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but the real thing is they've got the technique and the horses up front to do it. So they're better at it than everybody else. Other teams are trying. They're having some success, but not nearly as much. They're going to get better, other teams, as they do it. They'll probably never get as good as the Eagles. Now, I think the play is going to be outlawed, and I think it should be outlawed under a variety of reasons. But first of all, it is impossible to officiate, number one. Number two, if it goes, it's antithetical, I think, to the game of football, in that you're not supposed to be able to help, push, carry, pull, put on your shoulders, throw a ball carrier to advance him. You know, the ball carrier should get the yards on his own, other than the guys blocking in front of him. That's the essence of football. So the play is antithetical to what football is. It is impossible, getting more and more hard to officiate, as you saw in the Commanders game. And it is potentially an increased injury risk, although I hate to lean into that because the whole sport is insanely dangerous, and so I don't like cherry picking. Oh, it's a dangerous play. But the other argument against is that you're not allowed to push defensively to help yourself on special teams plays. They don't let you line up over the center anymore. Well, that's a great play. Now can I go back to lining up over the center so I can actually stop the play? So yeah. I think it's going to be banned, and I think it should be banned. There you go.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree with you on that. And I think there, you know, the discussion about, well, how do you ban it? What's the rule that bans the play? Because in legislating
it, you can't push a player.
But what about pushing a player beyond the line of scrimmage?
Can't do that either.
Yeah, but see, that becomes very hard, and this is the way I would explain it. Once you get a ball carrier going downfield, and now you've got a big offensive lineman actually trailing rather than being in front of that ball carrier, hard to distinguish between an offensive lineman trying to block somebody in front while simultaneously maybe pushes it.
Two fixes. Yeah. Fine. I hear you on that. Two fixes. One, you could just say you can't push a ball carrier behind the line of scrimmage.
That's what I've said.
Easy fix. Or you could go, you cannot push a quarterback behind the line of scrimmage.
Well, then you'll just line up a running back behind the center.
Well, okay, you can't push the person who takes the snap from behind the line of scrimmage. There's your language right there. That fixes it right there.
That's exactly what I proposed.
I think it's
got to be from the line of scrimmage. It's the line of scrimmage and behind it, because the snap, technically the quarterback can get to the line of scrimmage quickly and then you can push him. So it's the line of scrimmage and behind it. There's no pushing of any ball carrier. And that's an easy rule. Then you can keep the pushing downfield. You know, they outlawed the pulling a few years ago.
I know. Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah, I mean, it, absolutely.
Let's talk some NFL through 5 weeks. Is it obvious to you that the 49ers are the best team in the league?
I mean, to everybody. They're an absolute unit. They're incredible to watch. I should hate them more than I do. I'm finding myself liking it more and more because I like the individual players. I think the Purdy phenomenon is fascinating. He's tearing it up right now. The uniforms, I'm a uniform geek, and they're so perfect. They're so gorgeous. And it's hard not to go, wow, what a team. Look at them do what they do. It's steamrolling towards the Eagles, Niners again, but then again, that's not going out on a limb. A lot of people had that before the season. So, yeah, they're awesome to watch, and they've done it having completely fucked up the entire situation with Trey Lance, which is kind of staggering.
Yeah, all the picks, and yet, I mean, imagine the talent they'd have on the team if they had those picks, potentially. So one of the things that in describing the 49ers the last couple of weeks in watching them, I can't remember, and maybe you can, I can't remember a team that has so many offensive players that are so hard to tackle. You know, every once in a while you end up with, you know, just an incredibly physical running back or a great after the catch, yards after contact receiver or tight end. George Kittle's impossible to bring to the ground with one or two tacklers. Deebo Samuel, the same thing. McCaffrey is tough to tackle. This dude, Jordan Mason, the other night, you could not get him down with one tackler. I just think it's one of those things that just sticks out to me every time I watch them. How many yards after contact they get with, and it must be what they're looking for in offensive players, high skill, high talent, but then this incredible competitive, you know, tough, I'm not going to get tackled by more unless you have three people on my back. Can you remember a team like that?
No, you're right. You're right. That's a good observation, but why isn't every other team looking for that? They must be, right? How do you spot that? How do you get that sense? I have no idea. I know this. They have what I call more one-of-one players than any other team, being that there's no real replica to that type of player. I mean, Debo is a one-of-one.
Yep.
A guy who can play running back and wide receiver equally well and is also a tough son of a bitch. McCaffrey is a one-of-one. I think Bosa is a one-of-one, even though the league has a lot of really good edge rushers right now doing their thing.
Fred Warner is a one-of-one.
Kittle went healthy, not a one-of-one because he comps to Kelsey, but still incredible to watch in action. And a lot of these guys were, I mean, what was Kittle? Fifth-round pick?
Yeah.
Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. They're finding the dudes, man. Full tip of the cap to your boy Kyle and to Lynch, who's a bit of a pretty boy. They got it rolling. Now, the question is, how big is their window? And when do they have to pay Purdy? After next year? Do they get three cheap years of Purdy and then have to pay him money? Or is it after this year they got to pay him?
It's when non-first rounder means no fifth-year option. It's 4 years of a deal. He's in the second year of his deal. So it wouldn't be until after.
No, okay, hold on.
Oh, no, I know what you're saying. When versus...
Let me rephrase it.
Yep.
They don't have to pay him until 4 years.
Right.
Most teams like to pay their guy as soon as they can, but they're prohibited, are they not, from paying him until this offseason, 2 years in?
I don't know if that's true. I actually don't know if that's true.
I think you cannot pay a guy until 2 years in, according to the stupid-ass CBA that these players signed onto. I'll look that up.
I didn't know that. That wouldn't make sense, actually. I'm not sure who that would benefit.
Don't you remember Alfred Morris couldn't get paid right away after 1 year?
I don't remember that, but I think we have a new CBA since then. But anyway, back to Purdy here for a moment, because it brings up an interesting, you know, question, and that is, let's say that they do win a Super Bowl with Purdy. Let's say Purdy continues to play at the level that he's playing at, but there's this feeling that Garoppolo, they got there. They were within a quarter, up 10, of closing it out. You know, Kyle nearly did it with Matt Ryan in Atlanta. What if they decide not to pay him and they go to the next Purdy?
That'd be something. By the way, since the 2011 CBA, rookie deals are locked in. Four-year deals, they cannot sign an extension until after the third year.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So there you go.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
Nice job.
So they got Purdy for $1 million for another year after this. But it's amazing.
Yes, so
is he good? Like, here's the thing. How good is he? He's good. I'll give you that. How good is he?
He really grew on me Sunday night more than any other game. I've been sitting back saying, I have no idea, because with Kyle, I've seen this now for years, going back to Matt Schaub. Everybody looks good in his scheme. Everybody, like Cooley always explains about the whole Shanahan scheme, they're just easy answers for the quarterback always, and that's the way it's designed. And so if you're able to throw a football and be smart, you're going to be, you know, halfway successful in that scheme. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, he grew on me the other night. What I saw, there's a toughness to him. He throws a really nice ball that's catchable. He's decisive. Even though he's not super tall, he doesn't play small. I kind of like him.
I love him. I love the story of him. I would love to see him, though, on the Giants right now. Just show me that.
Yeah.
because I do not believe. You'd be like, what happened to this guy? So we'll see. That's part of what makes sports fun, is the eternal mystery of not knowing if a guy is good or not and having guys come out of nowhere. And the Mr. Irrelevance out there becoming basically the talk of the league. It's cool. It's fun. I like him, though. I like his moxie, like the cut of his jib, even like his parents in the stands, although some people are starting to bitch now. Do we have to see them every game? What are you going to do?
You know, the guy that found Brock Purdy for Kyle and John Lynch was Brian Griese. You know, Greasy's like an adopted son of the Shanahans. He left the booth to try to get involved in coaching, and he's the one that really pushed them with that last pick. He said, this kid's played so much football, he can do this at this level. And after he got that right, he's their quarterback's coach this year. But what I was going to say was, guys that play as much football as Purdy did in college are starting to get more run, even if they're not the physical freaks. Like, playing a lot at the college level certainly makes them readier, I guess, more ready when they get into the NFL. He played a lot at Iowa State. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I did not know that. I mean, look, you got the last pick in the draft. It's a throwaway pick. So why not take a quarterback? I'm surprised there's not a run on quarterbacks in the seventh round by teams.
Right.
Say, hey, we just want to get this guy in our camp, see what he's made of, run him through some things. You would think, right, for it being such an unstaffable position league-wide, QB1, that there'd be more investment in it. There's not. There's some drafts where there's like three quarterbacks taken in the first five rounds. And you're like, you really? No one else needs a quarterback. You don't need an insurance plan. You don't need a backup. Last year, 64 quarterbacks started games. So double the league got to start. Some teams, I think half the teams stuck with their QB1, and then the other half had a mixture of QB2 and a few QB3s in there as well, starting games.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking through just to see if there are years in which there are runs on quarterbacks, but it's hit and miss. Like, the year Purdy came out, there were three of them taken in the seventh round. And then a few years ago, there were four taken in the seventh round. But, you know, the history of day three quarterbacks in general, it's such a needle in a haystack thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That they look for guys that can play early on special teams, I guess. Or, you know, in Washington's case, they look at a long snapper, the guy that they drafted in the sixth round a few years ago. Real quickly, before we get to...
Well, hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Hold on. I'm now digging this seventh-round discussion at quarterback.
Yeah.
Because you and I remember the Hawaiian slinger that the Redskins took, and sadly he died of
Colt
a truck
Brennan.
Overdose.
Yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah, Colt Brennan. I think he was... Was he seventh or... I think he was sixth. I think he was.
Sixth round, okay. There was also a handsome Stanford quarterback who was like a seventh rounder back in 2000 or so that a young reporter, Bram Weinstein, befriended.
Oh, yes.
Hamden? Right now.
Was it Hamden or something like that?
Yes. Not no Jabron Hamden?
Yeah, Jabron Hamden, but he wasn't Stanford.
No. I'm thinking of a Stanford guy. That
hold on, I'm looking for it.
And I remember, you know, in August, these seventh rounders get in there for some garbage time against the UPS truck drivers of America.
Todd Husak.
And they look pretty good.
Todd Husak.
Yep, old Todd Husak. So for every Brock Purdy, there's a pile of Todd Husaks thrown away in the garbage.
Jabron Hamden, seventh rounder from Indiana in 2003. and by the way, in 2001, the Marty year, he's the one that drafted Sage Rosenfels, who actually was in the league for a while, wasn't he?
I know.
I'm pretty sure he was.
I know. He got a few starts. This morning we were talking on my show in Milwaukee about the Kurt Benkert comments about clashing with Matt LaFleur on his way out. And Benkert was I believe, undrafted out of Virginia, but was QB3 behind Rodgers and Love for 3 years. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, how it is to be a, you know, low quarterback on the totem pole and politics and the personalities involved. And I said, I feel for you if you didn't get along and that's why you're no longer in the league, but it's all about playing the game if you're that guy. Because the guy who played the game like a chess master is Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was in the league up until last year. I think he's not on a roster this
year. He's not.
Daniel made $41 million.
Yeah.
And he played 5 games.
I know.
I remember the first day he walked out at Redskin Park, didn't know who he was. I was like, who's that shrimp? They go, that's that quarterback from Missouri. I go, what? That guy? 13 years, $41 million a year later of just break glass and case. Crazy.
Well, you know, I've done the Chase Daniel segment on the show many times before. And,
oh, you have?
And I bet you've done it as well because – And the last time I did it was really in talking about Geno Smith, because Geno Smith was – now, Geno Smith had legitimate talent. Like, nobody questioned his arm talent coming out, second-round pick, the whole thing. But these quarterbacks that stick around forever but are clearly not guys that you would play without having to break glass first are clearly smart. Great in the quarterback room, great in the locker room, you know, have some leadership and mentorship ability. Like, you, the Chase Daniel business win is one of the all-time greats in the history of the NFL. $41 million, 5 starts.
Yeah.
Like, Jacoby Brissett has kind of, now he has started more games, but Jacoby Brissett, everybody says about Brissett, what a great dude. He is one of the most beloved guys in your locker room. He can play a little bit. You just can't start him for 17 games. Colt McCoy, same thing. Now, Colt started a lot games.
Colt, very similar.
Yeah,
I'll never forget what our colleague and friend and former radio partner at Times, Larry Weissman, formerly USA Today, said about, I forget, some backup for the Redskins. He said, yeah, he's good as a backup, as long as you don't have to play him.
Right.
And it was such a great line. He's great as a backup as long as you don't have to play him. It makes you sit there and think, like, well, wait a minute. Okay, well, what do you mean? Okay, I think I get it. He looks the part. You feel like he might be able to play, but you really don't want to play him for more than a hot minute before it goes south.
I mean, how is Nathan Peterman still in the
Peterman's
league, right?
Peterman's still in the league? I have no idea.
Yeah, and it's...
That is a truly confounding thing. How is Blaine Gabbert still in the league?
No, and then you look at somebody like, you know, RG3 or Josh Rosen. See, here's the thing. It's a great life lesson for all of you youngsters listening. Be a good person. Be manageable. Be coachable. Be helpful. Go beyond the job description. You know, it's show up to work every day. You know, there's like, these are the kinds of people that, okay, for our third string quarterback, we don't want a headache. We want somebody who's smart. We want somebody who will do anything we ask him to do. And by the way, is okay. And $41 million later, Chase Daniel. So, Washington. Oh, real quickly, who were you talking about when you said had a disagreement with Matt LaFleur on his way out? Did you say Rodgers? Because you broke up there for a second.
Kurt Benkert.
Benkert. Okay, got it.
Benkert. So he was the third round guy. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, he was the third string guy. I think he was undrafted.
Yeah.
And he was on the roster, practice squad roster, as the QB3 for 3 years. And, you know, kind of, he was like the Earl Badu of the Packers. There's a reference for people.
Yeah.
So he was a little bit of a mascot, like old Benkert is there, right?
Yeah.
Rest in peace. He did Earl a lot Badu. Of online gaming stuff.
Yeah.
He did a lot of social media stuff, which I think the team probably didn't love him doing. But, you know, he's doing that now. And it's interesting. He's bringing some things to the table, and they're his side of the story. So who knows how true it is or what he's leaving out. But it's interesting. He had high praise for Kyle. big time, because he played under Kyle as well. He said, Kyle has an insatiable desire to understand everything that's going on, the whys of everything, of the offense, of the plays. He said, I'll take any play. It doesn't matter if it's his or somebody else's, or if he kind of stole it from another team, that he's insatiable. He's a maniac in that regard. And he said that Kyle also has a really good ability to go from being just a dude, from being Kyle, to being Coach Shanahan. And that's a hard thing to pull off. Did high praise for him, and I forget the other coordinator he played under, but yeah, he said him and LaFleur did not get along.
All right, well, maybe this is the perfect segue into a conversation about Sam Howell. Is Sam Howell going to be one of those longtime starters in the NFL, or because he's apparently a great kid, incredibly coachable, has some skill and talent, is he going to be a guy that just lingers on NFL rosters for the next 12 years but never becomes anything substantial? Let's let Zabe answer that and talk more about his thoughts on what he's seen from Washington over the first 5 weeks of the season. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. We continue with Zabe right after I thank David Kotler for dropping off my dad's chips, potato chips. They were excellent. Gary Adell is the founder of My Dad's Chips. David's a longtime listener of the station and a fan of the podcast as well. And that was very nice of you, David. The chips were enjoyed by everybody in the house over the weekend. The barbecue were excellent. The original flavor, great. The French onion chips were pretty damn good. You can find out more at mydadschips.com. So, Zabe, what are your thoughts on Sam Howell so far through five games?
I mean, I haven't taken a deep enough look, and I wouldn't claim to be smart enough sitting on the couch scratching my belly button to really know. So it's all a guess. I like him, and I like the fact the Commanders have somebody they can really roll with here for a while to see where he goes, where he takes his game. But part of me says, eh, he could be Gardner Minshew 2.0. A brief sensation. And then, whatever happened to that guy? Now, Minshew's getting spot starts in Indy now.
Yeah.
He's playing pretty well. But is he really a franchise quarterback? Nah, he's a QB 1.5 kind of guy.
Yeah, we did something a while back. I said, give me your hunch. This was before the season started. Give me your hunch on
what would be the best – what is your best Sam Howell comp?
Yes, that's what
and
I –
your worst Sam Howell comp.
That was what I was just going to propose to you. We think the same thing. So before the season started, I think my answer was Andy Dalton, best case. And, you know, I hope that it's something like Colt McCoy – worst case, but it could be worse than that. But I was trying to keep it somewhat positive because Colt McCoy has been a longtime backup in the league and an occasional spot starter. But I don't know that I would change it on the best case from where I was before the season started. There's still some things that bother me about Sam Howell, but I am definitely more encouraged than – I didn't know what to expect, Zabe, and I kept telling people, I don't know how you guys know. We haven't seen him play in the NFL.
No.
Like can we got to see him play a few games. The few games have been more encouraging than discouraging, but there has been, you know, there's been some discouraging. What dropped him to the fifth round was, I think, a combination. It's clear now, a combination of two things. His size and his inability to see it quickly enough, and that leads to him holding on to the ball and taking a shitload of sacks. I mean, he is on pace to shatter the NFL record for sacks. But they don't have a great offensive line either, and I don't know. I've seen enough to want to see more. But I don't – if you
– I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, I think the sacks are problematic because everyone can fall back on. Our offensive line is injured. Our offensive line is terrible. The 2.6-second league, as you know.
Yep.
That's what you got. You got 2.6, take a couple steps, diagnose what's happening, and get the ball out of your goddamn hands. That's it. So, you know, the sacks are way more on the quarterback a lot of the time than we give it credit for. So that's troubling, but isn't part of the reason that he was a fifth rounder is because he came back for one more year and his draft stock was higher the year before?
Yeah, it was. You know, I've talked to enough people, like, well, I had Scott McLuhan on the show, and Scott said, look, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, guys don't drop from first round to fifth round because of stats. You know, his senior year.
So what was it?
It was something else, clearly, and at the time he didn't have an answer.
Did McLuhan elaborate?
No, he didn't necessarily have a clear answer. He said there's something there.
Did McLuhan get hammered with him? I mean, that could have
Stop. That can we're not doing that because that got Chris and I in trouble one of those years, and we didn't even say it. I think he just said, I said, look, statistically, there was a bit of a step back because he didn't have his best weapons and he didn't have his two NFL running backs and the offensive line.
Right.
And he said,
right.
Yeah, but you don't go from the first round to the fifth round because statistically you went back a little bit. They know what he was working with that year. They know he didn't have the same group. I think ultimately it was, you know, the sacks. He took a lot of sacks in college. You know, the processing, you know, the speed, as they refer to it. What do you make of the Washington situation right now? You know, 2-3 with truly a one-sided beatdown loss to Chicago on Thursday night. I don't know how much time you spend talking about them on your show, but I know you have an opinion. So what's your opinion about what they are this year?
Well, step one, get rid of Snyder. Mission accomplished.
Super Bowl.
Hallelujah, dancing in the streets.
We won the Super
Bowl.
Step
two is get rid of this turd coach. I mean, seriously. Andy is like, don't worry, he'll be gone at the end of the year. And I said, well, then what are you waiting for? Well, you know, it's not going to matter during the season. And I'm like, send a message. Send a message we're not fucking around. Like, there's people now saying, look, I'm glad Josh Harris is not Dan Snyder, and I don't want him, quote, meddling in everything.
Right.
But there's no reason you can't get in there now and start making some decisions. Anyone who watches Rivera, and more importantly, listens to Rivera, knows this guy ain't it. And he's costing you at least a game or two a year. So big picture is, great, the owner is out. The coach has got to be next. Quarterback probably has another year of figuring it out. Depending on where you land in the draft, you got to take another quarterback. The defense, I mean, that's such a weird situation. They should be way better with all the draft picks and all the money they put into that side of the ball. And the draft class this year has been horrific. Oh, my God. I mean, you're probably going to have to fire, the Martys, all the Martys.
Well, that last point you made, I think I agree with everything you said prior to that. Because the other day, for whatever reason, everybody 5 weeks into the season, everybody seems to be, you know, doing a segment on their show or writing a column on how the 2023 Washington draft class was a complete bust. You and I have both been NFL fans.
You think it's too early?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, it's...
Wow.
How can you?
Nobody's playing. One guy's playing. He's playing terrible. Everyone else is not even playing.
Yeah, but Zabe, one of the reasons a lot of the guys aren't playing is until last week they hadn't had any injuries, none. And by the way, they were a 2-0 football team, you know, through the first 2 weeks.
Okay.
So
I think it's
you know, ridiculous 5 weeks into their rookie year to evaluate a draft class. Usually, it's hard to do it after 2 years. A lot of the guys.
True, but I do believe your first rounder should play almost right away, and should be making some kind of an impact.
But we know that doesn't happen every year with every team. In fact, they're probably a third that don't make any kind.
But if you don't have your first rounder playing at all, or if he's playing and not making an impact, then you messed up that first round pick. I think
it's too early even on
that.
It's disappointing that he got benched, no doubt, as a first-round pick. But the thing about this roster is that people, for whatever reason, you know, people, they jump on this idea, oh my God, let's focus in on how bad the draft was this year. I mean, and since they sucked the other night, why don't we play these young players to find out? Well, most of the players that are playing are young, you know, and getting their first opportunities in their second year. I mean, Cameron Curl and Jamin Davis. And look, even the defensive linemen, you know, are relatively young. Allen and Payne sort of coming into their primes. You're not going to bench them. Benjamin St. Juice looks like a really good corner in his third season. He's starting to, you know, he's playing a lot more. It's really their offensive line that has some age to it in some spots. But even Sam Cosmi, you know, it's his third season. The kid Sadiq Charles in his fourth season. It's like, I don't know. Like, no one would be. I'd like to know what's the 49ers draft class doing so far? I mean, obviously they're great. You're not gonna bench anybody, but I wonder how their draft class is doing so far. Yeah, we won the Super Bowl already with Dan being gone. That's true. Rivera, I think everybody's come to that conclusion. Me, definitely slower to the punch on him. Not that I thought he was great, but I think he did.
Are you finally there on him?
I'm ready to move on. I think he's ready to move on. I think a lot of the, you know,
I don't care what he's ready to do.
Yeah.
I'm tired of him saying the most illogical, stupid things after the most illogical, stupid decisions.
He says a lot of dumb things. He forgets a lot of what he said. So do we.
He compounds dumb decisions with dumb explanations. It's the darndest thing ever. As his attorney, I'd say, just don't talk.
Not the best communicator. And that would be great legal advice. Ron, you're not allowed to talk anymore.
Right.
So what else? What about Dak and Dallas?
He's just not good enough. He's the Black Kirk.
That's great.
I love Kirk. I think Dak Prescott has handled the job of quarterback, Dallas Cowboys, the second hardest job in America behind president, with incredible poise, professionalism,
right,
on the field, off the field, in the locker room. But he just doesn't have that sense of, okay, I got to get rid of the ball, or, okay, I'm going to step up here. There is not much Dak magic when it comes to how he plays the game. But he's very competent. He's a pro's pro. Who knows if, you know, he'd still be the player he could be before the ankle got blown up. It's probably taken away some of his mobility.
Yeah.
But he's just okay, and that's the problem with the league. The league used to thrive on teams saying, you know, we got a quarterback, he's fine. No one's going to have a poster of him in their room, you know. Jeff Hostetler, Ken Anderson, and we're going to go all the way. We're going to win the whole damn thing because we can run the ball, we can play defense. That league that you and I grew up on doesn't exist anymore. The entire league is unicorn hunting to try to find the next Mahomes or Burrow.
Yeah, Ken Anderson. Ken Anderson was a borderline Hall of Famer, by the way.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Am I besmirching? But he was a boring player.
Boring personality.
Jim Hart played for a long time. You know, he was just a guy that dropped back and could throw it, 6'5".
Yeah.
Big dude.
Yeah. By the way, you know, for the opener, they brought back a lot of players, and they brought back Jim Hart.
He was a one-year... one-year Redskin. But
even you, me, and Andy barely remember Jim Hart being a Redskin. He was a Cardinal.
I know. And I hated him as a Cardinal.
Yeah.
Because he cut our hearts out multiple times. No, I had this argument with Andy. I said, these reunions needs an editor to say, here's who we're inviting. Mm. It's not like if you ever put on one of our jerseys, you can come back. And this was from the Darnarian McCants invite for him to come back on, you know, Alumni Day. I'm like, come on, man. Nobody cares about him. He doesn't get an invite. Oh, if you're going to have a homecoming, you got to invite everybody. I'm like, does who? Where? In what charter? Is that Geneva Convention? You should say, if it was me, and this is just me, I'd pick a dozen X players a year who are our selected honorees. So that way you let the public know we're not saying it's a company picnic, everyone's invited. You're saying here's 12 guys from certain periods of the team's history that are significant that we would like to bring them back, and they're alive, and they can walk without a walker, because nobody wants to see that. Don't want to see the old football heroes wheeled out in wheelchairs. Depressing.
It really is.
But I'd pick 12 a year, and I'd say, here's the 12 honorees, and stop inviting these guys back. Where I always get Andy stumped is I say, okay, invite one, invite everybody. Does that mean Haynesworth? No, that guy, that asshole, no. Definitely not him. And I'm like, well, now you're breaking your own rule. He's like, but for that guy, I will break my own rule.
What if the 13th guy is Darnarian McCants and he says he's going to pay for Chipotle to cater the picnic?
That'd be good. That'd be good.
You're
in. You're going to bring Sua Cravens back?
No. Josh Doctson. Oh, I mean, they did bring RG3 back. But big difference. RG3 had a magical season here. He did.
I mean, I have no problem with RG3 coming back. He's an important part of the team's history, even though he was a comet that flamed out it very quickly. And it got very messy at the end. Okay, here's another one. They're going to play the game of, would you invite this Redskin back to the annual picnic?
Well,
Sue Cravens I had. Who else was a real bag? I'm trying to remember. There's a short list of guys you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, I mean, why am I blanking on the guy that, you know, said that God told me not to sign the deal?
Oh, yeah, Sean Gilbert.
Sean Gilbert, thank you. Sean Gilbert.
Although, Sean Gilbert, the Sean Gilbert trade.
We bringing Brandon
Carolina.
Lloyd back? Are we bringing Stubby back? Are we bringing Archuleta back?
Yeah, right. Archuleta was a nice guy who said, look,
he's good on the air.
Offered me X.
Yeah.
What's that?
He's actually good as an analyst.
Yeah. He said the Bears offered me X, but then the Redskins blew it out of the water. What was I supposed to do?
Of course. Can't blame him. Yeah.
And then they couldn't use him. Yeah. No, you're right. There's some good names to remember. You're like, nah, I really don't care to see that guy again. You going to bring Jim Zorn back?
Yeah, right. Can you imagine?
Gonna bring Vinny back?
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, the people that aren't, you know, hobbling out or being wheeled out are from, I mean, not everybody, but they're from an era in which they just lost. And, you know, and I've done this with Cooley many times, and I say to him, look, I love you dearly, but you played in an era which we don't like to really even acknowledge, some of us. I mean, it was painful from ownership to, you know, on down, and the results were terrible. But doesn't mean they're not great guys and good to talk football with. What else?
You gonna bring back the five kickers from the five kicker year?
Oh, did you just pull up the list?
No, I don't have.
Because you
list.
Know
if you can pull it up for me, that'd be great.
Well, you know kickers.
Year?
You know kickers. This is your spot.
Are we gonna be able to recite it? I should be able to recite it just off the top of my head.
Kai Forbath. oh my God! Recently, Dustin Hopkins.
Brett Conway was good.
Conway was pretty good.
I know, but he got hurt.
John Hall, wasn't he? John Hall.
Yes.
From the Jets?
The former Jet. I believe
Eddie
Conway,
Murray. Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray. Norv set him out.
Here we go. 2000. Eddie Murray begat Michael Husted, who begat Chris Hepner. No, I'm going the wrong way. Got Bentley, the Florida State phenom. Got Bentley begat Brett Conway, who begat Chris Hepner, who begat Michael Husted, who begat Eddie Murray.
Oh, my God.
You want to invite all those guys back for the picnic?
Oh, my God. I just remember that last game for Norv, which was the Giant game when he got fired after that game. and it was 9-7, and Eddie Murray told him, I can't kick anything outside of 45 yards, and it was a 46 or 47 yarder. Norv said, get out there and kick it anyway, and of course it came up a yard short.
As I recall that, it was worse. They went out to kick it. You had the basics right. They went out to kick it. Then they called timeout. They went back to the sideline, and then Eddie Murray did a U-turn, went right back out, tried to kick it, landed back line of the end zone, and we found out after the game what happened. He said, I told Coach I can't make it from this distance, and Norv said, nah, sure you can. Give it a shot.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Call the timeout. Timeout, Coach. I cannot make this. I literally cannot kick it this far. Norv, I believe in you, kid. Go out there and kick it. Oh, the fun times we had.
God. That was season number two under Dan, which was, by the way, Zabe, and I went through all of the preseason odds. At some point I did it during the summer during the whole Snyder, his leaving thing. It's the last time before the 2000 season that Washington was actually considered to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Like, they were top 2 to 3 in Super Bowl odds heading into that year. Remember, that's the, Dion, Bruce Smith.
Coming off of the missed field goal in Tampa.
Exactly. Here. Well, they never got the kickoff. Remember the snap by the Bruno?
Right, snap, yeah.
Wow. That's the last.
Good work by you.
Well,
good,
I mean,
degenerate research by you.
I didn't think that there was a year during the Snyder era in which there was actually legitimate preseason hope of being good.
No.
And the only season was that 2000 season.
What was the highest odds in August when the Super Bowl in the Snyder era? 15-1?
The best odds to win the Super Bowl was 2000. They were like 7-1 to win the Super Bowl.
No, but I mean, since then, what was the highest it rose to? 15-1?
Oh, they were. You mean like what was the next best odds year heading into a season?
Yeah, right. So at any point during Snyder's tenure, other than the 2000,
the 2016 season and the 2006 season, they were, they had over unders at like 9, 9.5, and they were, somewhere in that top 10 range of Super Bowl odds. They went.
But what's the number?
I went through this. It was a while back, but it was probably somewhere in the 25-1, 30-1 range.
Okay, so 25 to
somewhere
one.
Around there. Yeah,
so
20-1.
So never better after that second year, never better than, say, 20-25 to
no, one. No. That was a year in which, remember, they won the division. As you recall, they lost to Tampa after beating Detroit in the wild card round, and they signed, they did fantasy football Dan Snyder year one with Bruce Smith and Dion and Carrier and Jeff George and the whole thing, and people believed in it, and they had them as the NFC Championship favorite. And I believe that they were right there with the Rams in the NFC.
Yeah.
And I forget who the AFC team was now, actually, that was up there. But anyway.
How'd that season turn out? I forgot.
8-8.
Good one. Was it a good season?
Eight. Not too good. yeah.
All right. Well, new times are here. Got to get rid of this coach, and then we'll see if Howell's really that dude.
Fingers crossed on that. Thanks for doing this, as always. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. My gym in 2 weeks?
Absolutely. And probably by phone. When you say your gym, it's a home game, but by phone. Yes. Anytime you want.
By phone with SEC refs. Is that okay? Neutral conference referees.
Listen, the road team gets their refs, so for me, it's Big Ten refs. We got to go Big Ten refs.
Whoa! You're not bringing Ted Valentine to my place. Not gonna happen.
Good call. All right, see ya. Hope you're well.
All right. Bye, buddy. See ya. Bye, bye.
Zabe, everybody, at Zabe on X on Twitter. Back tomorrow with Tommy.